This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Howdy and welcome back to another episode of Rough Draft. This is your daily dose of essential web writing advice. I am your host, Damian Farnworth. I'm also your muse and your digital recluse and the chief content writer for Copyblogger Media. And thank you, as always, for sharing the next few minutes of your life with me. By the way, if you like this show, the best way to show your support by jumping on iTunes, giving me a rating or a review. Let me know how I'm doing. I love hearing from you. It always makes me want to work harder. So, now that we did a little house cleaning, on to the show. So here's the thing. You can spot a mediocre writer from miles away because they got flat verbs and obtuse nouns and lame metaphors, and there's a lack of stories in what they write. And I should know, I used to be one. And really, compared to greats like David Mamet or William Faulkner or David Ogilvy, some of my heroes, I really still am a mediocre writer. But in regards to the mediocre writer, it seems to me that they want an edge, that they'd want to stand out in some sense, that they'd kill to get their hands on words that crank out power like a Floyd Mayweather right hook. That they'd do whatever they could, even read unorthodox books. See, I fell into writing because I loved words, but you can also love the wrong words. Case in point, I remember telling one of my college professors, or maybe it was a high school teacher, which means he was also the gym teacher and the health sex ed instructor. Whoever it was, I remember telling them that I loved words. That words were important to me, that I hunted down rare, interesting words in my leisure time, and I circled them and I piled them in my notebook. Words like basorexia, which was an overwhelming desire to neck or kiss. And words like ascendanticist, which is someone who fakes a smile. And there's gentacular, which referred to breakfast. Or neli pot. Someone who talks without shoes, which I'm doing right now. And there's petrichor, the smell of rain on dry ground, which I love. Recumbentibus, which is a knockout blow. And then slubberdajulian, a filthy, slobbering person. Finally, wan weird, which was an unhappy fate. Beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful words, but you can't use them in a normal conversation. See, my teacher, the person I was talking to, whatever, nodded kindly, sniffed, and went on her way. I didn't understand. These were some hot words. Or were they? Do you see anything strange about these words? I mean, raise your hand if you said seems pretty complicated, the average person wouldn't know what those words meant, and that's what I'm talking about, right? Copywriter stud Bill Jamie, he came up with a Psychology Today ad headline that says, "Do you close the bathroom even when you're home alone?" He believed that when you used low-rent, fifth-grade words, you were insulting the reader's intelligence. He believed in the 12th-grade word, like the words I just shared. Perhaps his breed of readers were smarter than ours, but I doubt it, because there's another story. Unfortunately, the words above are words that belong in a scientific journal, people who have a legitimate PhD and not one bought online. That's not to say you shouldn't ever use these words. I mean, feel free to use them, just use them sparingly, like once every 1,000 words. Besides, when I said I was in love with words, that's what I meant. I do love words. I imagine you probably love words too. I collected words like a child collects rare insects, which means I didn't intend to use them in any constructive way and to show them off to anyone marginally interested, which was no one. And when I did, the results were always awful, of course. So in college, and maybe this happened in high school, but I honestly cannot tell you what I did in high school, nor when I was ever required to write something, nor what I learned, or how in the world I even got my diploma. I was a public school product. Especially during the remedial English classes I took in college, since I didn't learn the basics of English grammar in junior high school, I wrote papers based on my favorite words. In other words, I started with a word like recumbentibus and tried to tap, shove, weld, and ramrod that sucker, some kind of essay, around that word. And as you probably guessed, every essay I wrote was rubbish because it just didn't flow at all. Typical critiques were like, paper lacks focus, or seems like you're trying too hard. That was obvious. I mean, who wouldn't struggle when they were trying to write about their summer vacation and the keyword was recumbentibus? So that was the problem. I started every paper, everything I wrote, backwards. Instead of just writing and allowing my native vocabulary to naturally fall into place, I wrestled to get words and ideas to abnormally fit around the words I love so much. And that's not what you are to do with this. Building your vocabulary is meant to arm you with the right words when you need those words. Unfortunately, sometimes you may never use those words, and that's fine. As long as your writing carries a clear, concise, compelling cadence, if you only use one of the words I'm about to share with you, so be it. So let me ask you, where do you get the words you use? I hope you said books, at least articles. Blog post is okay, but if it's the only way when you need help, reading, my friend, is central to good writing, as is reading wide. So set your religious objections aside for a moment as I introduce you to one of the best marginally unorthodox methods to developing a wicked vocabulary, the King James Version of the Bible. Why the KJV and not something slightly more readable like the NIV or, God forbid, the Message? That's a good question. The point is to pick up words that vibrate with life, that bristle on the page, that choke people. And the KJV is actually chock full of those words. Words like asunder, begotten, blemish, bullock, which, by the way, is the name of a local vasectomy surgeon, I swear. Derision, hex, oblation, rage, smitten, uttermost, vessel, vex, and wrath. See what I mean? Those are fighting words, hot words, sawtooth words. Okay, so do you recognize anything different about these words versus the words I shared earlier? They're shorter, yeah. They're action-oriented, yes, and they're immediately recognizable, and that's the kind of vocabulary you can expect to pick up when you read the KJV. So, how much KJV should you read? How should you read it? Well, you could read a book like Job or Lamentations and Psalms and Ecclesiastes in that order. You'll get a low-grade vocabulary surge as you read some pretty potent stories and scenes. And warning, it will be a history lesson in the realm of human suffering without any obvious answers. But it will also teach you to think like a philosopher and even a psychologist, which are two great ways to becoming better writers. And once you're done reading those four books, and this is going to be a great summer of reading, right? I thought so. Move on to Jonah, 1 Samuel, Judges, and one of the Gospels, preferably John. Why, after you beef up that vocabulary muscle, you need to next beef up the storytelling one. In these books, you'll encounter and probably learn for the first time where the story of David and Goliath and Samson and water to wine miracle, all stories frequently encountered in classic and contemporary writing, will make you seem slightly more literate than you're already now. Because that's the name of the game, right? Getting better at our craft. So tell me, what's your favorite unconventional source for great vocabulary words? And slightly off the subject, what are you reading this summer? I'm curious. And are you up to the 100 books a year challenge? Are you in? I mentioned that in the last episode. Let me know in the comments on this blog, on Twitter, Until next time, take care.